So maybe next time. I want to read two passages of scripture. I could have read many, many more on the topic that I am speaking about today, courage. It's a whole different matter than just adjusting a dial. There are umpteen passages that I could have resorted to, but I want to read to you part of Psalm 31. In you, Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be put to shame. Deliver me in your righteousness. Turn your ear to me. Come quickly to my rescue. Be my rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me. Since you are my rock and my fortress, for the sake of your name, lead and guide me. Keep me free from the trap that is set for me, for you are my refuge. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Deliver me, Lord, my faithful God. Be merciful to me, for I am in distress. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and body with grief. My life is consumed by anguish and my years by groaning. My strength fails because of my affliction, and my bones grow weak. Because of all my enemies, I am the utter contempt of my neighbors. But I trust in you, God. I say, you are my Lord. My times are in your hands. Deliver me from the hands of my enemies, from those who might pursue me. Let your face shine on your servant. Save me in your unfailing love. Praise be to the Lord. For he showed me the wonders of his love when I was in a city under siege. In my alarm I said, I am cut off from your sight. Yet you heard my cry for mercy when I called you for help. And he concludes with the words, love the Lord, all his faithful people. The Lord preserves those who are true to him. Be strong and take heart, all you who hope in the Lord. And a perspective from the New Testament. It's a very familiar story, and we are not generally fishermen around this area, but we can apply this story to situations that we have found ourselves in. The day when evening came, he said to his disciples, let us go over to the other side. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with them. A furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, don't you care if we drown? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. Then he turned to his disciples and he said, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even though they knew who he was. Even the wind and the waves obey him. I've probably told a few of you this story before, but big deal. When I was a boy, as some of the rest of you were, I was in the younger half of the family, and I had a very wise sister who was the oldest in the family. We were the six of us as children, and we didn't have electricity in the house. And we were in the back room, away from the main activity room, and she was regaling us with Halloween stories. And deep down, I knew that this was a bunch of malarkey. But she kept telling us these wild stories. And after a while, I heard my mother do the usual call. She said to my brother and me, "Don't forget to get water from the well for the next day." And I knew that, being younger than him by 4 years, he would carry the pails and I would carry the lantern. And we headed across like that toward the well, and our driveway was over here with a fence around the garden. And all of a sudden I was distracted. There was a sound coming from over there. And I looked, and in the dark, as much as it was, I could tell it was a white thing. And it made strange sounds, like woo. And I said, "Art, there's something coming over there." And he, being so big and strong, he said, "Oh, never mind, it'll be all right." And then that thing turned the corner and headed toward us. And I said, "Art." Oh, he said, that's probably Joel, the little white calf. And I said, "Art, it's coming closer, and it's not Joel." And he, of course, the very brave one, he grabbed the lantern away from me and he held it up and he says, "You get away from here or I'll clobber you." I don't know who he thought he was talking to. And with that, my sister threw back the white sheet and roared with laughter. It wasn't funny. For me as a boy, courage was a word to describe a soldier that I would read about in the books or hear about on the radio, or a bullfighter. Now I would call that person who's willing to get into a ring with a bull something else, but at that time it was a bull. That was a courageous person. Or the other thing, I was absolutely fascinated in my childhood in reading the little storybooks from the school library on the pioneers going across the United States and Canada in their covered wagons. I thought, oh, they must have been brave. We have numerous scripture stories of faithful witnesses wrestling with courage in their own individual lives. There was Moses, who was asked by God to give particular leadership to the people of Israel. And he said, "No, God, I can't do that. I'm not powerful enough to do that. I'm not strong enough." But God persisted, and somehow Moses did give leadership. There was Abraham, who again was so hesitant and reticent. But God said, "No, I want to make a great land and a great people with you as the leader." There's that wonderful story about Ruth, who was widowed at a very young age, traveling with her mother-in-law, and she had all kinds of experiences. And then, of course, after that, if we read our church history, we'll find the tremendous courage on the part of those people that we know as Christian martyrs. But going back to our place on the farm in southern Saskatchewan, I have such a clear memory. And last summer, when we had our family reunion, we found out that a number of us in our immediate family had these memories of our mother, busy standing at the end of the table, which was the all-purpose table, and she was canning either fruit or vegetables or meat to take us through the winter months. And I would sit in the place where my father usually sat, and And I don't know what we conversed, but I took in these scenes. And I noticed that some of the spices that she would use, she would go way up in the cupboard and she'd reach back and bring this container out. So in other words, they weren't around all the time. But there were some that were very ordinary, like the salt and other things like that. I'm suggesting for us today that courage is an everyday ingredient of daily living. In the New Testament, the word courage is not mentioned per se. However, the New Testament breathes the spirit of courage in its fullest sense. Courage is an attribute of a single person or of an intentional group of people standing together in a common quest. And the group that we're concerned about here this morning is who we are. That is a community of faith in worship. Courage is that spirit that is seen in steadfast endurance, boldness of speech when necessary, and undaunted faith. But do we always reach that point? Jesus' own example of courage is seen in his ministry and passion, which was and still is every day being passed on to us, his followers. Jesus encouraged his followers both in his teaching and by his example. Persons encouraging one another speak of a quality of relationship. Courage can be an integral part of every one of us. Sometimes we possess it, at other times it eludes us. Some can muster up courage at the strangest, hardest times, but there are always, in every community, in every family maybe, there are others for whom it is very difficult at times to access that courage. Any one of us can be at either end of the continuum at one time or another. Anne Lamott writes some wonderful books. And in the first one that I ever read years ago, Traveling Mercies, she says this: courage is fear that has said its prayers. When I worked for 11 years in the Children's Hospital in Halifax, and particularly on the unit for cancer, both blood and with tumors, we worked hard as all the different disciplines, the three physicians that were there, the nurses, the social workers, everyone that was around. And every so often, the hospital would send us away to have a retreat or to continuing education. And I remember on one occasion, we really clicked. And it was at a time when we vowed, Paul, I wish I remember his last name, he did a very good job. But he taught us, he gave us the, and we vowed together, that we were going to catch one another doing good. In other words, as we observed one another and experienced each other across the bed of a child or whatever it was, that if you noticed something that really struck a note for you, you were encouraged to draw that to the person's attention at the right moment. In other words, to say, you did good. And I don't know why that idea stuck in my mind, but it has. Somebody should have thought of it a long time ago. Walt Disney is to have made this statement, and I have it on in my office. A ship in a harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are for. In other words, we're not going to always have it easy. We live in a very, and I think at this time, a very screwed up world, where things are, great ideas are being shuffled aside too often, and we have to reassess everything. And some of the negative things are coming too strongly to the fore. So I think we need to know when to speak and when to be quiet and when to be courageous. Any one of us will be in need of encouragement at some time. Daily living can throw us some interesting curves, and to face them requires courage. Coming to grips with a diagnosis of a serious illness, either in myself or someone I love in the family or someone that I know, or maybe even death, or the issue of growing old. For some people, it is a great time. They look back and say, wow, I wouldn't want to go through some of those decades again. But for other people, getting older is a scary thing. Loss of employment. And we have a lot of people around us who are still suffering from that. Loss of income for one reason or another. And then not least of all, family dynamics that can appear. I could have also chosen to read from the Epistle of Hebrews, where he writes to the congregation that's having a lot of difficulties. But the writer encourages the people to hold fast, to call on the memories of the faithful who have gone before us, which he refers to as the great cloud of witnesses. How do you see yourself being an encourager of others? And there's no one here that is excused. We are in this life for a purpose, and that, I'm sure, is one of it. Are we aware of what happens when we add a small three-letter prefix to the word courage? Courage itself is a beautiful word, has umpteen meanings. But if you put the letters D-I-S in front of courage, then it means to lower, to maybe even diminish. That means, and those characteristics, to diminish someone else, is certainly, to the best of my knowledge, is not in the top 10 characteristics of being a follower of Jesus. But on the other hand, what happens if you put EN in front of courage? Encourage. To lift up. To multiply. To celebrate. In my visiting, as I do as a retired minister, in my visiting of different congregations, I try to discern, what is this congregation good at in terms of being a Christian community of faith? I don't need those other things that everybody else knows about that congregation, and they're usually negative. But what does this congregation do well as a Christian community of faith? I hope that one of the basic precepts of any congregation is to encourage one another. That is basic and crucial. That's as basic and crucial as we can make it. My friends, we are called to be communities of faith. Call them congregations. After next year, you will no longer be a congregation. You will be a community of faith, which is also a beautiful term, powerful in meaning. But to encourage is our ministry. Let us sing the hymn, How Firm a Foundation.